This is the Jerry Callahan Show.
Well, it is day 13, I believe, in the Donald Trump trial, and it was a tough start for the media, for the regime media, who are salivating over this. There is a team of about 72 people outside the courthouse for CNN and for MSNBC, just waiting for this moment. Stormy Daniels, yes, Horseface herself, is going to take the stand today. And a reporter from MSNBC just broke the bad news. There will be no discussion of Donald Trump's genitalia, the reporter said. They were hoping, they were praying, but their sources tell them they will not ask Stormy to describe little Donald. The two of them had a one-night stand in 2006, and they will be discussing that magic moment and all that entailed. Donald Trump paid her $130,000 for a one-night stand when she was a younger, I assume, more attractive porn star in Lake Tahoe, California. They're going to get into all the details of that, but they promise not to discuss Donald Trump's junk. Trump says in a True Social post that he found out she'd be taking the stand at 6:30 this morning. That's how much time the defense had to prepare. Now, they were already obviously preparing for Stormy, but generally you get a little more time than that. But we all know this trial is rigged, and every ruling Judge Mershon, the Biden supporter, every ruling he makes is in favor of the prosecution and against the defense. And today Trump spoke again before heading into court. And I think we can all agree on one thing. I think, you know, on both sides of this issue, we agree that there should be cameras. There ought to be cameras in there. This would just be wild. Stormy taking the stand and Trump just staring her down. And the prosecution asking questions about their night together. 18 years ago, they had a one-night stand. And that's what they're going to be discussing today. How ridiculous is this whole charade? As Ironhead said, she should take the win. She got $130,000 for having a fling with a famous, whatever he was, businessman, TV host back then. She wrote a letter saying they never had sex, which nobody believes, but she took the money. She said she wouldn't talk about it. And now she's going to talk about it in front of the whole world, essentially. I don't get this. NDA means a non-disclosure agreement. When you sign one of those and take the money, I don't know, it just seems to me you shouldn't disclose, but all rules are out the window because Donald Trump is on trial. And boy, does the Biden campaign need this. This is their best hope, to just keep Trump trapped, maybe put him in jail. I'm still going to predict. I know all the legal experts say Mershon won't do that. Mershon yesterday said in court that he doesn't want to put Trump in jail, but he might. He even said, "You're a former president, and you might be the next president. I don't want to do this." But Trump's not stopping. He's talking. He put up a post this morning mentioning witnesses and then took it down. And then it was retweeted a million times. So Trump broke the rules again. He'll get fined $1,000 again. He's up to $10,000. But Mershon, at some point, I still believe, is going to say, "I have no choice. We're putting you in jail, or at least home confinement in Trump Tower." That's coming. That's my prediction. I could be wrong. But it's going to go on at least 3 more weeks. They're going to keep him stuck in New York Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday for at least 3 more weeks. They've done everything to drag this out. They're going to continue to drag it out. And then Trump will face his next trial. And while that's going on, Joe Biden will be, his appearances will be limited. This story is amazing. They don't know what to do. As I've said for a year now, Joe Biden's not capable of running for president. I mean, he's running for president. He's running for re-election, but he can't do the basic things you have to do to run a campaign. He can't make appearances. He can't make speeches without stumbling and bumbling. He can't draw a crowd. He can't do interviews unless it's with that absolute whore, Howard Stern, who took pre-planned questions and just read them to him. Even in that context, Biden struggled. He might do The View. You know, he might do some friendly podcasts, but he can't do a real interview. He won't even sit down with the New York Times, which wants him to win more than anybody. He can't sit down with MS. He can't sit down with Rachel Maddow or Jake Tapper. He's incapable of campaigning. We've never seen anything like it. I sound like Trump now. There's never been anything like it, but there hasn't. At least in my lifetime, I've never seen a presidential candidate who can't campaign. God knows he can't debate. He will at some point do one debate. They'll try to rig it every way possible. They'll have, you know, some, you know, Jen Psaki will probably be the moderator. But even then, Biden will be an absolute mess, and they know it. This was from MSNBC, NBC, 2 days ago. As President Joe Biden ramps up his reelection effort, his campaign is scaling back how much he says on the trail, part of a larger new strategy to hone a sharper message he'll take into the general election, according to Biden aides. The less is more approach aims for quality over quantity when it comes to the president's public appearances, his aide said. All right, here's campaign aide, T.J. Ducklow. He says, quote, there's a strategic advantage at this point in the race to boiling down your message to the three or four most salient arguments for why Joe Biden should be reelected. That will translate to the stump speech being whittled down to its sharpest, most dynamic form. That is what you're seeing. So the strategy is quality over quantity. There's a flaw in that. When have we ever seen quality public appearances from Joe Biden? When has he ever made a speech or a campaign appearance and you said, that was strong, man, that was really good. More of that. There is no quality. There's going to be limited quantity, but the quality is just not there. So they're going to attempt to hide in the basement again. This won't work. We know he was allowed to hide during COVID. We know the media did the campaigning for him. We know big tech helped suppressing the laptop and any other criticism of Joe Biden. That's out thanks to Elon Musk. And he can't say, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I gotta stay in the White House. I gotta stay in Delaware and do a couple of Zoom calls. He has to campaign. Even his friends in New York Times and MSNBC will say, Joe, you know, you gotta come out of the White House. You gotta campaign. And he can't. A new ABC poll. This is just amazing. 81% of Americans think he's too old for the job. He's one of the two candidates, and more than four of five think he's too old. 55% Trump said Trump was too old. That's a big difference. Trump people, and so many people just hate Trump. They would say, yeah, he's too old, even if they don't really believe that. But 81% think the president is too old to be president in 8 months from now. That is incredible. So we're going to see less of Joe Biden, fewer stump speeches, fewer public appearances, and they're just going to hope they can convict Donald Trump. That's their big hope. That's the campaign strategy. Hide Joe Biden and convict Donald Trump. And today, they ramp up their efforts, bring out Stormy Daniels, and attempt to make the public think that's a crime. You know, cheating on your wife. That's what they're just trying to mess him up, dirty him up. Everything they've done in the last 2 weeks in this trial is an attempt to just make Trump look bad, make him look immoral. Is it a crime? Of course not. We all knew he had lots of women in his life. We all know. I mean, we went through it 4 years ago, 8 years ago. We're going to go through it again. See, Trump's a bad husband. Trump's a hound. That's the attempt, but it can't work. It won't work. because people are already done with that. They've already accepted that. The people on MSNBC and CNN say this every day. Oh, you know, he's cheating on his wife with a Playboy bunny and a porn star. We knew that. People voted for him anyway. Christian conservatives, evangelicals support him because they look at his policies and they look at what a disaster Joe Biden is and they say, I'm okay with a guy who's had 3 wives and 3,000 girlfriends. They're okay with that because they know he was a better president, because they know Biden has been a disaster. That's the mess Biden supporters have to clean up. They can say what they want about Trump, but they can't defend their guy. I mean, they end up sounding like Mark Hamill, who was up there rambling about the CHIPS Act and what a great president Joe Biden has been. And you know who's not going away? Joe Biden's going to go away. He's going to hide. And while he's hiding, his party, his biggest supporters are going to continue to fund the chaos in this country. We got into this a little bit yesterday or the end of last week. The people paying for the campus upheaval, for the protesters who are saying death to Israel, kill the Jews, death to America. The people who defaced a World War II memorial in New York last night. They were protesting the Met Gala and they were blocking traffic in Manhattan. And as part of their effort, you know, to stop the genocide, they defaced, vandalized a World War I memorial, and they burned an American flag in New York City. And they were proud of it. So lots of them didn't even have masks on, which surprised me, because you could see the video of them torching the flag. This is not going to stop. I'll get into the latest from Gaza, but this is not going to stop. And this was from Politico, which is, again, an arm of the Biden campaign. Nobody works harder to help Joe Biden than Politico. And they reported 2 days ago, Joe Biden has been dogged for months by pro-Palestinian protesters calling him Genocide Joe. But some of the groups behind the demonstrations receive financial backing from philanthropists pushing for his reelection. And they got names, and they got George Soros, Rockefeller, Pritzker. These are billionaires who support Joe Biden and despise Donald Trump. And they are funding these scumbags. They're buying the tents. You know, they're buying the kafifas, the scarves. That's who's behind this. Joe Biden's biggest supporters are funding the effort to disrupt this country. And I guess they thought it might work like the George Floyd protests, where you get chaos and people vote for the incumbent because, I don't know, it's an emergency situation and we can't have, you know, a regime change. We need to keep the guy in office. But think of that. The wealthiest and most devout Democrats are paying for these pieces of human excrement to riot, to cause chaos on college campuses and in our major cities. And they're not going away because Israel is not stopping. It's hard to believe, but Israel is not bending to the whims of some 19-year-old gender studies major at Columbia. They're moving into Rafah as we speak, as they should. We'll get to the latest on that, and we'll get to some of the latest protests. They're hilarious. My favorite, I'll just give you my favorite today. At Harvard, believe it or not, Harvard, huge encampment. I took a ride by the other day, huge encampment. They're feeling emboldened. They're at Harvard, you know, so they know the administration, the president, the professors all support them. They know it's Cambridge, so they get lots of support in the community. Well, they were sleeping late last night at the Harvard encampment. They were in their tents, tucked away. Some great patriot on campus, and I hope someone finds this person, got out some loudspeakers and cranked the national anthem and woke them all up. How great, you know, at Harvard. I assume the kid has already been expelled who did that. But these are people They don't like the national anthem. They don't like the American flag. They don't like this country. And they're promising to double down their efforts. The weather's getting good. The war is escalating. They're not going away. Do you have that video of Harvard? And they're all in their tents, and the guy cracks the Star-Spangled Banner. And you can just picture them in it, smelly, dirty. That's the thing. These places are filthy. I told you about the one at MIT. Just dirty, filthy, smelly. And they're enjoying it. They're enjoying their fame and their moment in the spotlight. You know, fighting for the Palestinians. Let's burn an American flag and deface a war memorial here in New York. For the people of Gaza. They're such frauds. We'll get to the latest. My new favorite Ivy League punk who is fighting for Palestine. There it is. Is that the campus of Harvard?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, they got them all. I mean, they're so well protected. They're all fenced in and cops everywhere. And these kids are so privileged in person. There's no risk. They take no risk. They're just out there saying, yeah, I'm fighting the good fight. These are people that should be studying for finals and looking for jobs, but they found meaning in their empty lives, and they found fellow travelers, you know, people they can bond with. They're losers who probably had no friends in high school. Now they have friends, and they all have keffiyehs, and they all have, you know, free Palestine signs, and they feel like they've got some meaning in their lives, and they're affecting nothing. Except people's lives were trying to get to work. But God, let me hear it. Let me hear the name. We should have started with this, the national anthem.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we
every night. I should. They, I don't know what time, but I don't know, 3, 4 in the morning. And these people probably sleep till noon in their tents. Weather's good. They should do that every night at the same time. Although I'm sure the cops knocked on his door and the university is threatening to expel him. But
definitely.
We'll get to my new favorite protester. We're gonna get her nickname at Princeton. This chubby girl at Princeton. We will tell you what she's going to do until she's going to take a stand until Israel stops trying to kill terrorists. She's going to take a real stand, and I think it's going to make a difference. We'll get to that. We'll get to the Brady fallout. We asked yesterday, what's going to happen? You know, we got an answer to the question of, did Brady really tell Jeff Ross to lay off Bob Kraft? Jeff Ross himself explains, and Nikki Glaser, my new favorite comedian, she reveals what the ground rules were. There were rules in place. There was some things, some places they could not go, and they didn't go. Although she tells you, she tells a joke that she wasn't allowed to say at the roast, and it's great. She is just so edgy. I got to tell you. And oh, by the way, another man sets a record at a track meet, a college runner in women's track. So he's setting records left and right. This guy, we'll tell you about that guy and lots more. But first,
excuse me.
If you're anything like me, you have a certain tendency to put things off until the very last minute. You know, when I get my car inspected, some reason I always wait till the last minute, the last day. When I pay Ironhead, I always wait till the last minute. And while most of the time it works out, the one thing in life you really cannot afford to wait on is setting up term coverage life insurance. You've probably seen life insurance commercials on TV and thought, yeah, well, I'll look into that later. No, this isn't something you can wait on. Choose life insurance through Ladder today. Ladder is 100% digital, no doctors, no needles, no paperwork. When you apply for $3 million in coverage or less, just answer a few questions about your health in an application. Since life insurance costs more as you age, now is the time to cross it off your list. You just need a few minutes and a phone or a laptop to apply. Ladder's smart algorithms work in real time, so you'll find out if you're approved instantly. No hidden fees. Cancel anytime. Get a full refund if you change your mind in the first 30 days. So go to ladderlife.com/Jerry today to see if you're instantly approved. That's ladderlife.com/Jerry, G-E-R-R-Y, ladderlife.com/Jerry. We got to get a nickname for my new famous pro. You know what? You know who's taking the biggest hit in this? The Ivy League. I don't think, at least for the near future, people are not going to look at the Ivy League the same. They're not going to look at Columbia, Princeton, Harvard, Penn. These are the hotbeds for these narcissistic brats who are lashing out, who they've moved on from climate change and George Floyd, and now they have Palestine. And they, as we saw on the campus of Columbia last night, they can't even spell Palestine. Huge words, graffiti at Hamilton Hall, which is the building they took over last week. Free Palestine. Palestine spelled wrong. There it is. Palestine. There's your Ivy League education. And it's not just Columbia. Obviously, it's Harvard. We just showed you. Princeton, they're jealous. You know, they're looking at Columbia. Looking at, we got to get involved here. So they're stepping up their game. And there's a group of these protesters who are in their encampment at Princeton, and they're vowing not to eat until the school divests from Israel, which, you know what? The school will probably give in. They'll probably bow to the demands and stop investing, cut all ties to Israel. But I think a real goal is to stop the war. And I think Netanyahu's going to take note of this. I think he's really second-guessing his war strategy, because Large Marge here is taking a stand. Let's listen to this. Princeton. I mean, that used to have an image of a Princeton student as like Bill Bradley, just someone who has it all together, smart and with it and in fit. I got a whole new image of Princeton students, Columbia students, now Harvard students. They're just clowns. They're just these self-obsessed, narcissistic, entitled brats. That's what they are. And they don't care about Palestine. It means nothing to them. They just found this cause, and they're going to play along. They're cosplaying clowns. Let's listen to the latest. Go ahead.
Fighting any people of conscience in the Princeton community, students, faculty, alumni, to participate with the striking students in a solidarity fast. In just the last few hours, we've had commitments from at least 6 people from Princeton Theological Seminary to participate in this solidarity fast, with more coming in by the hour. At the seminary, we've also been calling our school to disclose and divest for the last several years, and want to join together with the students from the university in their hunger strike. Almost every faith tradition in the world engages in the spiritual practice of fasting. The 3 major Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, are no exception to this. Jesus himself said, "Of some evils in the world, they require both prayer and fasting." And we are here to live into that word.
She's not going to eat until they divest, I think. Sure. We're going to be here a while. Do you think she made it to dinner? You know, do you think she made it? You think in her life she's ever skipped dessert? If you're just listening, if you're not watching along, she makes Ironhead look like Nikki Glaser.
That's true, probably. I wonder, she probably got pulled out, though. They have those medics that come around to check their vitals, and they probably realized her blood sugar was low.
That's right. They said, girl, you got to lose a few. This is a good idea. How about you fast for, I don't know, a month? If you have a group and you're going to organize a fast, a hunger strike, why do you pick the morbidly obese girl to make the announcement in front of the camera? Bad news to chubby girl here. The IDF, the Israeli military, is not stopping. They are moving into Gaza as we speak. And I've tweeted about this. These people, they're not only just clowns. They're not only cosplaying, LARPing clowns. They're stupid. They're just stupid. You know what's happening right now? The IDF, the Israel military, is protecting the Kerem Shalom crossing, where they're bringing in humanitarian aid by the truckload, hundreds of trucks. 2 days ago, Hamas fired on the Israeli troops at the crossing, killing 4 IDF soldiers. So Israeli soldiers are giving their lives to bring humanitarian aid, food, medicine, to the people they're allegedly committing genocide against. So I don't think it's a genocide. I'm sorry, I know I get these messages every day. Oh, you support genocide. No, I don't. You do, actually. You support Hamas. Their goal is genocide of the Israeli people, of the Jews. What Israel's doing doesn't fit the definition of genocide by any means. Think about it. They drop leaflets. They open up corridors for the people to get out, to flee. And they bring in trucks. And they want to kill all Gazans. They want to kill all Palestinians. How does that work? I think it is remarkable that anybody can support Hamas in this effort and accuse Israel of genocide when they are literally dying. They're giving up their own soldiers to protect, to feed Israel, Gazans, Palestinian civilians. That's not genocide by any doubt. If they wanted to commit genocide, you know what? They have the ability. They could kill everyone in Gaza. They have the firepower. They could blow up the whole place and kill everybody. They have done more to protect civilian lives than any military ever, more than the U.S. did in Afghanistan or in Iraq or in World War II, ever. They have done everything they can do. The culprit is Hamas. It's not complicated. Every civilian death is the fault of Hamas, who is still holding hostages and agreed to return 33 yesterday, dead or alive. So in order to stop the invasion, to stop the war, they'll give back corpses of Israelis who they kidnapped on October 7th. Sounds like a good deal, huh? Good deal. You stop attacking us, we'll give you back the bodies of your people who we killed, civilians who we killed on October 7th. It's just madness. These people are morons, and I hope they keep it up. I really do. I hope they keep the pressure on Genocide Joe, because this is all caused by his people, by Biden voters, Biden supporters, Biden donators, benefactors. The people funding this are the people funding the Biden campaign. Keep that in mind as you try to analyze who the good guys are here and who the bad guys are. It's just disgusting. You know what? We have to keep tabs on our chubby friend at Princeton. Let's see how she does.
I heard she's dead in the quad already.
Honestly, could she go a day? Could she go 24 hours? Has she ever gone, I don't know, 3 hours without a meal, without food in her life? I don't think
if she was serious at that size, she could last a while.
That's true. Bobby Sands lasted, I think, 60 days or something like that in Northern Ireland. So she could last, I don't know, 90 days, 100 days. If she were serious, she'd become a martyr. She'd get all kinds of media attention if she were serious. But as we all know, she's probably already broken her fast. And she probably has a big lunch planned for today. But that's where we're at. Ivy League students defacing World War I memorials and promising not to eat until the war is ended, and it ain't going to end. It's not going to stop. They're in trouble. All right. We got to move. We got to get to the Brady roast fallout. I got to say, I was a little disappointed that there weren't more people upset. We told you about the ESPN guy yesterday who thought it was disgusting, all the LGBTQ jokes. Apparently Giselle is not happy. Not surprised at that. She was, what are the words, deeply disappointed in the jokes about her. But you know what? That was inevitable. I don't blame her. You know, there were a lot of jokes about her.
I do blame her. She cheated on the guy. She shouldn't have done that.
That's true. It's her fault.
Yeah.
And Brady looked uncomfortable at the Giselle jokes. But, hey, it wasn't off limits. Only one thing was off limits, and that was they agreed beforehand no jokes about Brady's kids, his three kids, although they did joke about Bridget Moynihan, you know, having a baby out of wedlock and Brady abandoning her and all that. But they didn't mention the kids, and they didn't mention, they didn't make jokes about the kids. Nikki Glaser, the great Nikki Glaser, went on, who was the best. I rated her second best behind Edelman.
Behind Tony Hinchcliffe.
Ironhead thought all those jokes about Kevin Hart being short that killed Tony.
The Kevin Hart short joke was to set up the Aaron Hernandez hanging himself joke.
Okay, I give you that. Yeah, you know, you're not alone. Lots of people thought Kill Tony was the best because it was mindless, stupid jokes about how short Kevin Hart was and how big Kim Kardashian's vagina is. But
that always plays.
It does. You know, you know what? I'll give you that. Lots of people agree with you. I thought Edelman was the best, and Nikki Glaser was right up there with him. But she went on with Howard Stern, and she explained, we don't have the sound, but she explained that they laid down the ground rules. No jokes about Brady's kids, Benjamin, who's 14, Vivian, who's 11, Jack, who's 16. Unfortunately for them, I'm pretty sure a 16-year-old kid in this day and age saw this, watched this. I'm pretty sure all his kids know what happened here. And, you know, they were probably very uncomfortable with it. Again, I give Brady credit. He knew this was going to happen. He agreed to it anyway. And they put on the greatest show in Netflix history. They changed the world. Comedy's back, thanks to Tom Brady. But here's from Nikki Glaser. She says, quote, I couldn't say, Tom, hopefully we make out after the party. You can pretend I'm your son. That was not allowed. And I understand, but that is a damn good joke. As we all know, Brady was seen kissing his son on the lips when the kid was like 10. I remember talking about it on the radio and how weird it was because he's weird. He's weird. And it was a little strange. And she was ready for it. But they said, you can't do that. She says, like the reference to kissing his son, which my dad kissed me on the lips as a kid and throughout my adulthood. So I really, really related to that and never judged him in any way. Other than that, I thought it was a cute moment that we took too seriously. So that was it for ground rules. No jokes about the kids. Everything else was on the table and God knows they went there. But everyone still wanted to know. When Brady told Jeff Ross, like whispered in his ear, something about Bob Kraft. Was that real? Because Jeff Ross made a joke about Kraft getting a massage. That wasn't really that offensive to anybody. It wasn't that dangerous. I thought it was kind of harmless, a joke about Kraft getting a massage. So what? I mean, it's part of the fun. Apparently it was real. Brady was trying to protect Kraft. The reason I thought it was a little disingenuous is because about a half hour later, Julian Edelman made a joke about Bob Kraft's funeral, which I would think if the rule was, you know, lay off Kraft, wouldn't Edelman, who is Brady's best buddy, wouldn't he have gotten the message? Wouldn't they have all gotten the message? No Kraft jokes? So they weren't, it wasn't, there was no understanding that you can't joke about Kraft. And Ross appears like he didn't know. Nobody told him he wasn't allowed to go after Kraft, and he did. You want to play the joke, and then we'll play Ross's explanation.
Said, "I'm the best decision your organization has ever made."
Okay, turn it up.
Would you like a massage?
Here comes Brady. Ross is still looking over at Kraft.
I love Robert Kraft. I love that shit
again. Brady says something, and Ross goes, okay. And then Ross says, I love Bob Kraft. So he didn't think he was breaking any rules here, but he explains, I think, we'll play it and you tell me. I think he's sincere here. I think he was genuinely told by Brady right there, don't make fun of Kraft. And he just kind of went, rolled with it, said, okay, I love Kraft, no big deal. So I think this is real. Some people still think it's not, that it was a stunt, but don't you think they had a lot to worry about here, a lot to do without, you know, saying we got to add this to the list, no more Kraft jokes? I mean, I don't think it was a stunt. I think it was real. I think it was Brady just trying to look like he's there protecting Bob Kraft, and Edelman just didn't get the memo. Let's listen to Jeff Ross with Rich Eisen.
They did show in the crowd. He did like that joke.
Rich Eisen got like more FaceTime than than Randy Moss during the show. He had a seat right in the front, and he got Jeff Ross on yesterday. Got Jeff Ross yesterday to come on and explain. And it was pretty interesting. We don't have to play the whole thing, but he explained this has been in the works for 3 years. He said Brady was a fan of the roast, and Brady agreed to it 3 years ago, and then they had to put it on hold when Brady came back to play for Tampa. And they finally get around to it, and he said Brady was great, but let's listen.
The one thing people are wondering about today, was Brady really pissed about you making a crack towards a massage joke?
Come on.
No?
Come on.
No?
No way. No way.
Because he came up, he said, knock that ass off, Jeff.
He's having fun.
Okay, good. Fantastic.
Fun, you know, it's like, that's his dad, you know? That's like, Robert Kraft is like a father figure to him, you know? He was just showing his love for Robert Kraft, and Robert Kraft loved it. We had a great talk afterwards, and he was so happy that I gave him a shout out and a salute. It was beautiful.
It was. And what, so when did this come together? Like, 'cause a lot of folks are wondering why Brady would subject himself, you know, or sit for this. What's the genesis of this, Jeffrey?
Well, there's a couple things. He loves the roast. He's a student of the roast. Mm-hmm. So there's that, you know, like if you love the roast, you know, everyone wants to be the center of attention, even when there's a target on their back. And in this case, it's all about him for 3 hours. And it was something I asked of him. You know, I asked him after he won the last Super Bowl. I hit him up. I knew he was a roast fan. And you know, then he was into it right away, and then we made a deal, and then he unretired, and I held it back till he retired again, and then we held it again till the Netflix is a joke festival so that all the comics would be in town. And I think it was worth the wait because he was loose and fun, and man, I feel like we won an election or something. Like, I can't believe it. We got through this 3 year campaign to get Tom Brady in the hot seat.
And it's not just that. The people you know that what? Came.
He's wrong. He said everyone wants to be the center of attention. Tell me this. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but who else is going to do this? This thing was a huge hit, huge success. We don't have the numbers yet, but I'm sure they're off the charts. And the, you know, it was to the center of attention for the last, you know, 48 hours. Who else is going to do this? Who else is big enough to agree to this? And who would get this kind of crowd? Who would sell the place out? Who would get the kind of audience, live audience for Netflix that Brady got? You know, the only one I could think of is LeBron, and he wouldn't do it. You'd think LeBron would sit there and take abuse like that for 3 hours? Tiger Woods, never. Who else is big enough, famous enough? Not even, I mean, Peyton Manning was there. And I was thinking about it when he appeared. He's not as big as Brady. Brady's bigger than anybody. I mean, maybe, I don't know, Messi, although I wouldn't know anything. I wouldn't understand the jokes. But what other athlete is at Brady's level and would agree to this? There's nobody. This was a one-shot deal. I mean, there may be some A-list actor or comedian who'll get roasted, but they won't draw the kind of audience Brady did.
Would Jordan do it?
Who could?
Would Michael Jordan do it?
No. Michael Jordan doesn't do anything, but plays 36 holes of golf a day. You don't see him out doing things. Yeah, I don't think so. And by the way, he's been retired for a long, long time. I mean, guys, his contemporaries would be on walkers and, you know, wheelchairs going out there to make their do their thing. But I mean, I don't think he'd agree to it. I don't think anybody who's at Brady's level would agree to this. Aaron Rodgers, there'd be a lot of material, but he's not at Brady's level and he's still playing. So maybe someday, but I don't think there's anybody, at least no athlete, who would A, agree to it, and B, draw this kind of audience. So this is like a one-shot deal, and it's just another thing that Brady did that no one else could do. And I, you know, we talked about it yesterday, and it was significant. It was pivotal. Lots of people are saying on social media, this was the day comedy came back. Canceled culture got canceled. That they made all these offensive jokes, LGBTQ jokes, 9/11 jokes, Aaron Hernandez jokes. Oh, yeah, we got to get to that. Aaron Hernandez, fiance, Shayana Jenkins. Remember her?
Mm-hmm. The one that helped hide evidence, that one?
Yes, the one who helped hide evidence and maintains, I don't know, that he's innocent. Nobody thinks he's innocent. She was upset. You know, I feel bad for Giselle, I guess, because she has to live with her kids after they see this and deal with it. I don't feel bad for Shayana Jenkins one bit. She was upset that her daughter had to listen to this or hear this or find out about this. She said her daughter still looks at Aaron as her hero. I'm sorry, you lose all sympathy when you say your daughter's hero is a murderer. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, lady, you got to help your daughter find another hero. You got to, I mean, maybe you're hiding the truth from her. That's on you. But I don't feel bad for anybody in Aaron Hernandez's circle, his world, that they made Aaron Hernandez jokes. Those were the best jokes. I'll give you that. Kill Tony's Aaron Hernandez joke was great. Nikki Glaser was great on that. Even, you know, the players, Edelman making Aaron Hernandez jokes. It was great.
Brady did too. He said there was a lot of rules back in the day with New England tight ends. Catch, block, don't murder.
Don't murder. That's true. That was the beauty of it all. Brady went, he was just as edgy as the comedians. You know, he went to those places that they did and, you know, he handled it brilliantly. It was amazing. And that Edelman joke about Alex Guerrero was great. It was spectacular. Maybe there are people, you know, right now preparing their think pieces on how offensive this is and how there's no place in our society for these kind of jokes. Well, screw them. There is a place, and it was on Netflix, and it was live, and it was beautiful. It was, I'm telling you, people who haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend it. I mean, maybe you will get offended, but too bad. It was great. It was just awesome. Anyway, all right, we got to get to the latest man to crush the dreams of girls, because we allow men to play girls' sports. And I want to do this, too, if we have time. We've been talking about the migrant crisis and how these sanctuary states and cities like Massachusetts are overrun. It's not just this insanity of the sanctuary city policies. It's a giant scam. People are getting rich off this, and we will tell you about that. But first,
excuse me.
Today's Callahan Show is sponsored by MyPillow. Go to MyPillow.com, use code word Jerry, G-E-R-R-Y, for huge discounts. For example, the standard MyPillow, normally $69.98, is only $19.98 with code word Jerry. MyPillow is made in the USA, comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. It's machine washable and dryable. It's the most comfortable pillow you'll ever sleep on. It makes a great gift. Get it now to support this show and strike back against cancel culture. As you know, Mike Lindell is constantly under attack from the cancel culture mob. By purchasing from MyPillow, not only are you helping us out, but you're joining the fight against cancel culture. MyPillow, as you know, not available in big box stores, but you can get factory direct pricing if you order from MyPillow.com using code word Jerry. MyPillow.com, code word Jerry, 800-893-7406, promo code Jerry. Wow, Stormy Daniels is on the stand, and says she used to make, she made fun of Donald Trump's pajamas.
Ooh.
Big breaking news, MSNBC's cutting in, CNN.
You know what? Throw him in jail. I didn't even think of that.
She made Donald Trump wears pajamas. No real man wears pajamas. Who wears pajamas? It's only on TV. You wear pajamas, Ironhead?
Gym shorts, usually.
I mean, you wear, if it's cold, you wear sweats. If it's not cold, you wear whatever, underwear. Mm-hmm. Who wears pajamas?
They're probably like silk and comfortable and probably have AC built in or something.
She told him to change his pajamas because she didn't like them. Okay. His broad tie maintenance. I don't like your pajamas. Can you change them? Telling this to a billionaire.
This whole thing's starting to make more sense.
Oh, why can't they have cameras? I'm telling you, I don't even know. Would it help the case, hurt the case? It would certainly be entertaining. And especially when Michael Cohen takes a stand. God, the media has their work cut out for them. They're going to have to pretend Cohen's a credible witness. And he's going to get savaged by the defense. And it's going to be glorious. But we'll keep you updated. According to MSNBC, there will be no questions about Donald Trump's junk. So maybe they're right. Maybe they've been wrong a lot. Maybe they'll get to that. Maybe they'll talk about how, you know, they did with Bill Clinton. How it was like crooked. He was all crooked down in there. I don't know. Or maybe I should say it was a big, beautiful, beautiful member.
Yeah, that would be the way to get him. If she admitted that, he probably wouldn't run for office. He'd be like, thank you.
There hasn't been one moment in 2 weeks that hurts Trump. Not once. Mm-mm. It's just a joke and it's backfiring bigly. All right, let's get to say her name is, I shouldn't say, geez, I cut myself. His name is Sadie Schreiner. Just gets more ridiculous by the day. Every one of these stories, you just say, how is this possible? I'll say it again. In 10 years, we're going to look back and we're going to say, who allowed this? Where were the adults? Where were the parents? Where were the coaches? Where were the grown-ups? So this boy, I'm sorry, man, he's in college. He goes to Rochester Institute of Technology, so he's probably pretty smart. And boy, is he kicking ass. This is all you need to know. Transgender college runner Sadie Schreiner won 3 women's events at the Liberty League Championship on Saturday. Schreiner of RIT won the 400 meters and the 200 meters. Both times would have been last in the men's race at the meet. Same meet, men and women. He chooses to run with the women because he's allowed to. He didn't want to lose. I mean, if he ran with the men, he would have finished last, dead last. Instead, he broke records. They were both school records for the Rochester Institute of Technology. He now holds the 200, obviously, the 200 meter women's record, breaking his own record that he set before. He was also the anchor leg that won the 4x400 relay by 3 seconds. They were in fourth place when he took the baton, and he just blew away the women he was running against. So he wins 3 events, 3 whatever, ribbons, gold medals, and sets 2 records. And this is okay. He gets to go on the medal stand. He gets to have his name in the record book. This is just madness. And I know people say, no, but, you know, his feelings matter. It is amazing. They never explain why the girls, the women's feelings don't matter. So women who would have won first place, who would have won a college title, would have set a record for women, have to sit there and look up at this bully, this punk on the medal stand and say, yeah, we're playing along with this guy's fetish, this guy's little fantasy to be a winner because he sucked at the men's sport and now he dominates the women. And I assume the crowd, the stands were full of parents, full of adults, and they all just watched this happen. This is just madness. And I know we've done it before, but we're going to do it again. It's just something that we will look back on someday, maybe 4 or 5 years from now. We will look back and say, who allowed this? And hopefully you'll be expunged from the record book because this is just so wrong, just so unfair. But speaking of unfair, I got to get to this story. Do I have time to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do. We talk, obviously, about the madness of the open borders, sanctuary cities, sanctuary states. It's still the greatest political maneuver in history. Greg Abbott and DeSantis, mostly Abbott, sending illegal aliens north to sanctuary cities, sanctuary states. By the way, that's only a small portion of the illegal aliens who've overrun these cities. Most of them get flown here by the Biden administration. So Abbott is flying illegal aliens to New York and Massachusetts and Chicago. He's not flying nearly as many as Joe Biden is. So when I hear Democrats blame Abbott, look at your own guy. He's the one sending him here. So it's not just an outrage that they put him in hotels and give him phones and have, you know, culturally sensitive meals and movie nights. There are people, I assume Democrats, connected people who are getting fabulously wealthy off this scam. There's a report by BZTV in Boston about how much we're paying for the meals. We've talked about it before. It's like $64 a day for each illegal alien. That's $261 a day, $244 a day for a family of four. They could literally eat at Capitol Grill, but instead they're at these shelters and these hotels and they're being fed slop, just garbage. How much can we watch this report? It's unbelievable. Go ahead.
Honestly, there's nothing edible.
Here are some of the dinners that taxpayers paid $21 for.
Gross.
Spaghetti with hot dogs and rice with one chicken drumstick.
The spaghetti with the hot dog in it. Really? We're paying $21 for that. Okay. It's crazy.
These lunches and dinners were given to migrants and homeless families at the Fairfield Inn, Dedham, Boston. The contract obtained by the I-team shows the state is paying this one hotel $7,343,316 for food, with no provision or requirement that the meals be nutritious or meet USDA recommendations, leaving it up to the hotel to decide what to serve.
When you hire a vendor like that, you need guidelines. So you really, really should have some oversight of the quality of the meals that are being served.
But the contract does not have any oversight provisions for the food, nor does it give the state the right to inspect the meals. The state is paying vendors millions without knowing what it's getting for its money.
I don't think that we could have really foreseen just how horribly this is being managed. When you look at those meals, and when you look at the cost of the hotels, it doesn't take a lot of negotiation to make these contracts better.
The Fairfield Inn is part of Geary Hotel Management. Nine of its hotels have state contracts, and by the end of the year, will collect $24,319,212 for the meals it's providing.
$24 million for absolute slop. Now, let me just say, I don't think we should be giving them any meals, none. You should be getting no meals at all, no hotels, nothing. I mean, this is an inducement, an incentive. That's why they come here. But it's not just crazy that we're giving them meals. We're giving them garbage and making people, connected people, rich. You know that one catering company? It's called Spinelli's. It's one I've seen. It's in East Boston. It's just one normal looking catering company. Their contract is for $10 million for 6 months, for half the 6 months, $10 million, no bid contract for a connected company connected to the, you know, the powers that be in the state. And they get for dinner spaghetti with a hot dog. Now, that sounds like something, you know, some college students would eat. I'm sure I ate that in college. Can you think of anything cheaper to make than spaghetti with a hot dog? What does that cost to make? To boil a hot dog and a little scoop of spaghetti? I don't know, $3?
That's just to make the whole batch. That's not even per meal.
Right, to make a couple bucks. So the taxpayers are paying $21. It cost this catering company $3 to make. I'll just give them that. I didn't even recognize that other garbage. Just bowls of slop, a pile of rice with one little chicken drumstick on it. That's whatever, $3-4, and we're paying $21 and more for dinner. It's average. It's $64 a day or $63 a day per illegal alien for the taxpayers to make these people fabulously rich. It's just madness, and it's a scam. And one hotel company gets $24 million of taxpayer money, and we wonder why they're going along with the scam. They're all getting rich. The taxpayers are getting hosed, and they should get nothing. But if you're going to give them something, shouldn't there be some oversight to say, that, you know what, they should give them exactly what they're giving them and charging the taxpayers $5. But, hey, you know, it pays to donate to the right people, and that's what they're doing. I mean, spaghetti with a hot dog, not terrible, but it ain't worth $21 or $31 for dinner. Just madness. All right, before we go, I want to throw this Hochul sound in here because this is
insane.
Once again, what Democrats think of African-American voters. This is, you know, we all know that Democrats think black people are stupid. They don't know how to get an ID. So if you ask for an ID, you're racist, which they ask for IDs to vote everywhere in the world, everywhere in Europe. In the United States, we're the only place that allows you to vote without an ID because it allows Democrats to cheat. But this is the governor of New York explaining, I don't know why they have to spend more money in these African-American communities. When I heard this, I thought she was joking. She's not joking. Listen to what a leading Democrat, a governor of our New York thinks of black kids. Go ahead.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word a computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things. And I want the world open up to all of them, because when you have their diverse voices innovating solutions through technology, then you're really addressing society's broader challenges.
Deadly serious.
She's dead. She's totally serious. Black kids in the Bronx don't know what the word computer is. Is there a single black kid in New York who doesn't know what a computer is? It's just, this is the greatest example of a soft bigotry of low expectations. Yeah. Black kids don't know what a computer, most of them have computers, I'm going to guess. You know, they probably get them at school. The budget of schools is ridiculous, and they don't know what a computer is. We're back. Are we off? We off the pajamas in the trial? I want to be sure we don't get to the junk before we.
He's getting nervous. Talk about pajamas. We know what's coming next.
Change your pajamas. Did he do it in front of you? I mean, how many times did you, what position were you in? These people are sick.
He probably paid her $20,000 to change him.
This is why this trial is going on. It's to embarrass, to two reasons, to embarrass him and to keep him tied down. It has nothing to do with the law or justice or any crime. There is no crime. It's simply designed to humiliate one candidate and help the other. And it's never been more obvious than today.
Right.
Oh, my God. Stormy Daniels says Trump reminded him of his daughter. That's what she says.
Sure.
They're loving this. They are aroused on MSNBC right now. They are so excited on CNN. Oh, yes, we're humiliating Trump and keeping him tied down as our feeble candidate shuffles around the White House lawn surrounded. That's the other thing they're doing. They're protecting him. Every time he walks across the lawn, they have three people on each side of him to make sure he doesn't fall and make sure the camera doesn't get a good angle of the old man shuffle for Joe Biden.
Or his new 6-inch cushioned shoes that he has.
his new Hokas. They're taking every measure they can to keep him upright for 6 more months, and it's not going to work. But anyway, that will do it for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Ironhead. I'm Jerry Callahan. This is The Callahan Show, and we'll do it again tomorrow.
But I'm going to go to bed.